This is Ink Studs, website exclusive interview. Inkstuds.com. Today's guest is, let me know if I got your name pronounced properly. Victor Cairo? Cairo?
Yeah, it's Victor Cairo.
Victor Cairo, a.k.a.
No, actually, it's Victor Cairo.
Cairo?
Pronounced like Egypt.
Like Egypt, but it's a Peruvian name, I understand.
It is a Peruvian folklorical dance.
Really?
So it's not my name, it's just a dance. And I think that my comics are like the dance.
Some kind of mystical, I don't know.
It's an indigenous thing. I guess you really wouldn't understand, a Peruvian Indian thing.
Okay. So your background is your Aboriginal Peruvian?
Yes.
Interesting. I did not know that. I knew you were Peruvian, but I didn't know it was Aboriginal. So. But you live in New York.
I'm a recent transplant. I've been here for approximately, almost 6 months.
Oh, okay.
And, it's an expensive place to live. It's a big city. It's scary. I spend the majority of my time holed up in the apartment, shaking in fear. There's just all these really weird people out there. But that's not true. No, I like it here. It's nice. I originally come from the Midwest, Iowa, Dubuque, Iowa. I'm very proud of that place. It's where I'm from, but it's totally unlike living here, with millions of people and all the different, faces and races and everybody, I see Jewish people on rollerblades. I just see all sorts of crazy things here. It's an awesome place, and I'm really happy, and I feel fortunate to be here.
Iowa sounds like the type of place where you'd go and eat potatoes and have roast beef.
It more or less is, or hamburger soup, or a place if you want to go, let's say you have aspirations or dreams, go there and live there, and then watch them just disappear.
Oh, that's sad, but true.
It is. No, it's not so bad. No, I want to thank, my origins. I mean, my homeland of Dubuque, Iowa, because I mean, it has inspired me to do the things that I want to do, to make my own stuff versus like consume everyone else's garbage. So I make my own garbage.
Now, just so people know, your pen name is also Bald Eagles.
It's one of my pen names.
What are your other pen names?
Tolerant Faggot. What is my other pet names? The Beard. What else? I don't even. Do I have a pet name? Wallywood Jr. is a recent one.
Oh, that's
Daniel
nice.
Daniel St. George Jr. There's a few others. I mean, it just kind of depends on the day and depends on the piece, and if the pseudonym matches the piece, it correlates, and I will change my name whenever or whatever, just depending on the piece or what I'm working on. Or Merc Griffin is also another one of my pen names.
The Griff.
The Griff.
The Griff. So, how did you? What did you have in mind when you started doing comics?
What's that?
Like, when did you start doing comics? Tell me about your history in comics.
My history in comics is, let's see, I was 18 years old, and I wasn't going to graduate high school. I was a really smart guy. I thought I knew everything, so I just was failing and everything, and I didn't really seem like I had that many prospects. But I knew I could always draw. I never really drew comics I always enjoyed comics. I read comics from a young age until my teen years when I stopped doing that, started doing drugs or whatever, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then I was 18 years old. I'm like, holy shit, like, there's only one thing that I know how to do, and that's draw. And I do like to tell stories and just whatever, make bullshit up. But also I'd like to be honest about things and tell things in a funny way. So the only way to do that is by making comics. And that's why I started making comics. This happened. I really started taking it seriously about the time I was like 19 or so. I actually, I'm sure you might have heard of these people, Jessica Abel and Matt Madden. They mm-hmm. sort of pointed me in the direction of going to the Small Press Expo in Bethesda, Maryland. I went there, met some people, and blah, 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 blah. I said, this is the place for you. If you want to do comics, this weird stuff that you do or whatever it is that you do, this is probably the place to meet people and talk to the right people. And they introduced me to an editor of, what do they call that? DC had a line of books called the Big Books.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yeah. They introduced me to the editor, Jim Higgins, who's, your stuff is blah, blah, blah. And so I did, at 19 years old, I did a two-page story for a big book of the 70s. And it's like the worst shit you could ever see. It's embarrassing. It's humiliating. It's really bad work. And I could have done better at the time, but I was like working on these super large dimensions that I wasn't accustomed to because I was just used to working with water-based ink, you know, really highly fragile. If you were to touch a felt tip line, then it's just going to smear, or you even blink at it, it's going to fucking smear. So I had to work with tools that I wasn't familiar with permanent inks and crow quills and whatever, and so I fucked it up, and it's an embarrassment to me. Like, these two pages are really bad. But then after that, I met Danny Hellman the next year when I was 20, and so I showed him, like, some really stupid drawings that I did. They were just fucking more, like, embarrassing stuff, but he saw some potential in me. And so they said, why don't you be in my dirty book and make a dirty story? And that's what I did, and that's how it started.
Awesome. So
unveiled.
And that was in the first Legal Action Comics.
And that was the first Legal Action Comics. And from there, it's just been a roller coaster ride.
And that is
not
the...
Not making money.
That's the masterpiece story, Super Cat Come.
Yes. Which is a true story where my friend Fuckface Digitalis, my true real-life friend of over 20 years, he builds a brainwave amplifier, and he wants to test it. He needs to test it out first before he applies it to himself to make himself super-powered. Because ultimately, and still to this day, he wants to be the most powerful sentient being in the universe, but, you know, he just kind of put it on a lower level, tests it on a cat. The cat, you know, emerges its true colors. In reality, it's like an offshoot of Satan or an incarnation of the devil, the super cat cum being that has been lying dormant in this body of this cat for how many years? Who even knows how old the cat is? It's kind of stupid. Whatever. Cat comes out. It needs to copulate. It needs to reproduce. And but neither myself or my best friend, Fuckface Digitalis, or Tim Potoff, however you want to call him, neither one of us are gay. We're not fags, so we have to be coerced chemically through this mist that he sprays out of his pussy cockhole juice thing that he has. And he sprays us, and then we both have sex with the demon cat.
That's a terrible kitty.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Okay, you know, maybe I'm not answering... Am I answering these questions
right?
No,
you are.
Is there a right way to answer them or a wrong way?
There is no wrong way.
Okay.
The only wrong way is to say yes or no, and that's it. Then I get upset because that's not very exciting.
So, yeah, I'm just... I figure, like, I guess this is kind of like me providing liner notes or, you know... So, and feel free to interrupt me if you feel like I'm just rambling or going off on...
No, no.
This bullshit.
How did you get involved with Kramer's?
Matter of fact, true story. Are you familiar with a cartoonist named Zack Soderbergh, Solaris, Zack Soto?
Zack Soto, yep. I went for sushi with him at Stumptown.
Oh, okay, well...
I met him. He's a fine fellow.
Dropping his name.
Yeah, little name drop in there.
He's a real famous faux hawk. He's a famous cartoonist.
With his rat tail.
And his little rat tail, he's a funny guy. He's all right. I've met him a couple times, and I guess he was somewhat familiarized with my work at that point, like 2002. I'm putting together the study group 12, volume 2, and I want you to be in it. And so then I put something in it. Also, Sammy Harkham was in the book. Sammy Harkham did an 8-page story about a guy cutting down a tree. And so we're both in the same book, and then the next year, this Jewish guy comes to me with a beard, and he's like, oh, you know, your stuff is fucking sick. It's crazy. Love it. I gotta have it. I love this stuff. What are you doing? You want to be in Kramer's? This was 2003. And I'm like, well, I don't know what Kramer's or God is. What is this? And he's like, well, blah, blah, blah. It's this book that I do. And so just like 2.5 or almost 3 years of just going back and forth, he's like, okay, I need your stuff. I want you to do a story. And then that's how I got in the book.
Awesome. What kind, were you given any direction or just a page count, or what formulated that story?
Well, what happened was I was in 2004, my appendix blew up like 3 days after my birthday. And actually, my birthday was yesterday, believe it or not.
Mazel tov. So,
thank you. What does mazel tov mean? Is that
celebration?
Is that Catholic or something?
Hooray.
Okay, Miles, thank you. So anyway, I just turned 28. So I had just turned 24, And when I was, I knew I wasn't feeling right. So like 3 days later, I go in the hospital. I'm all fucked up, and like my, they open me up. My appendix is all like, you know, sprayed everywhere, etc. And so from there, I needed to live in my sister's basement for about a year in this little small bumblefuck town. And then I had to work at an Old Navy. And so just so I could afford, you know, because having the surgery, emergency surgery, and like a week and a half stay in the hospital, I needed to pay this off. And I needed to work, and I couldn't even afford rent anywhere. So because it wiped up all my money that I had, so I was broke, and I lived in my sister's basement like a real winner. Had to do that for a year. So during that year, I just when I wasn't working at an Old Navy, you know, fucking, you know, fitting people's jeans and, you know, price checking and doing stock and bullshit. And it's like, this is not my life. I was fucking, I just couldn't believe it. I was kind of going crazy. And so I think that story is like kind of exemplary of like the anger and the frustration that I was feeling, like that was caused basically like, you know, because of my appendix exploding. And oh, so anyway, with the direction of the book, like he asked me, he said, "What were the guidelines?" Said he said, "Sam," he said, "you know, like okay, you can do whatever you want. I guess you can just. I mean, I trust you. I believe in you. I know you can do this." And so I was like, "Well, how much you know space can you give me? How many pages?" And he says, "He's like, okay, I can give you 15 at the most." And I'm like, 15, huh? And so I started writing the story. I started writing it, and I was writing it and going over it and over it, you know, just like hundreds of pages of notes and of all this stuff and putting everything together. But everything's just kind of eerily just like sinking right into, you know, locking in together like Legos. Like, okay, mm-hmm. All right, even the Lincoln Logs, Legos, all the fucking different seemingly incompatible pieces are all like sinking together. And it's like, holy shit, this is great. You know, like, I'm the greatest. You know, whatever, that's bullshit. Anyway, so I'm putting it all together, and I'm thinking, like, this is really good, but there's no way I can pack all this into 15 pages. I can't do it. So I need, like, at the very least, you know, doing some editorial fucking katana slicing, I come down to, like, 19 pages. Like, originally it was going to be, like, 40 pages, but I couldn't do that, you know, so I had to fucking cut and slice, and hopefully that, you know, the story would come out coherently. But I think it did. I mean, it makes sense to me. You know, anyway, so, but the thing is, I was just, he said 15 pages, but like, I can only do 19. And I failed to even tell him. I just kept on doing it, kept on working on it. And I actually had moved out of the basement. And I was going from one apartment to the next apartment, living on couches, working on this comic, smoking weed, fucking just like saying, fuck it, I have to do it my way. It has to be this way. And then, so I did it and I sent it to him and he said, okay, this is great. And he didn't even, you know, mention anything about like the 15-page page count that I totally ignored, you know, because I was so brave. I was so strong.
You stood up to the man. It's very...
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's very hyper-violent, I guess, is the aspect. What is it about the violence that really speaks to you?
I think I'm kind of an angry person. And my heart is full of hate. But not really. I mean, I don't know. I love people. I think things are. You know, I can enjoy life. I do enjoy life. But I think I like the way that I grew up watching action films. I grew up admiring these heroes that employed, you know, these very violent means of, you know, exacting justice or revenge. And, you know, and also I kind of saw, you know, parallels in the movies and the characters that I admired, and like also that the shit was kind of unfolding in my life, you know, dealing with people that fucking, like, you know, people, you know, history repeats itself, so people drive you nuts, are going to continue to drive you nuts, certain kinds of people fucking, you know, make you insane, you have to stay away from them or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But I do like, I like using violence, but in the comics, but not in real life. I think maybe if I didn't, you know, use violence in my artwork or my stories, my drawings, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I'd be more of a brawler or something, but in reality, I'm a gentleman.
Comic folks don't make good brawlers.
No, they're not. And I don't think I'm really physically fit enough to be the brawler that maybe I paint myself out to be in the comics, but I think that everyone else is in on the joke that, I mean, it's for the most part, it's nonsense. You know, however, I wouldn't consider myself a, you know, a floor mat or someone you can walk on. And I just, maybe, you know, through the comics, it's a not so subtle expression that says, like, I'm, you know, don't mess with me. I'm a good, I'm a good person, and I deserve maybe at least 1 ounce of respect.
Reading your work, it's the, I guess, this sheer honesty that, I guess the closest that comes to me is comparison for that kind of gust, visceral gut feeling that you have to go. It's kind of like Josh Simmons, where it's just you have this story in you, and it just, it's got to come out.
Well, yeah. Otherwise, I fucking beat myself about it. I beat myself up about it. You know, I don't know. I feel like I have to. Certain stories, I feel like I have to tell. But also, what am I thinking? What am I going to say next? What am I thinking? Yeah, I don't know. Some stories, some things, I just, you know, I'll also, if I feel that maybe something is just a little bit too heavy for myself to even just kind of like address, you know, openly in a comic, I'll litter it with, you know, with jokes to lighten it up, because I don't know, I think even the shit that like that really bothers me, I think sometimes I'm kind of, you know, I can react foolishly to things, and that's me, that by me making humor out of the things that go through my head, then it's like me acknowledging that, like, yeah, I'm not perfect, and maybe I'm not that much better than the things I don't like.
I think one thing that may be shocking people is the visual honesty, and one parallel that really struck out to me is Burroughs really struck me with, especially the one story of the cockroach in the bar and the shotgun, and that one, I think that's in the Typhoon, Denny Hillman's latest anthology. Was Burroughs an influence for you?
No, tell you the truth, that has like, if anything, that it must have been like a subconscious, you know, influence. Like, I mean, I saw what's that movie, the Naked Lunch with Peter Weller.
Mm-hmm.
There's that bug guy, but no, it's like it's not. It must have been a subconscious thing, because I wasn't actively thinking about it while I was painting that out or drawing that. I needed somebody to play the bartender, because I just didn't exactly feel like going back to that bar and getting reference of the person. You know.
So a lot of the stories kind of refer to your own life, even in their kind of absurdist qualities.
Yeah. Yeah, they're totally, that's, you know, what that's like the best reference that I have is the stuff that I know well. So that's what I'm going to go to, versus like making something completely out of my ass, like nonsense bullshit. Like, it has to actually have like some pertinence to like my real life and my experiences that make me up as a person.
So, like that story in the Typhoon, it's, you've pre-planned it in advance, because some people may think it's just like this mess kind of tossed together, but for you, you've put that story, and that's what you wanted to tell.
Well yeah, or like, you know, just if it's taken from real life, the story was already told.
Yeah.
And the best author is real life. You know, if I really want to be entertained, then maybe I'll start reading the news or something, because that's real, you know. But also, like, you know, I like, but also, you know, reality can be kind of boring too, because you can kind of like predict how things are going to unfold. So then you add the flourishing, you add your, you know, I don't look like that. I don't have horns that come out of my head. I'm not a half cyborg, whatever.
But
so,
that would be awesome.
That would be awesome. And as a little kid, I wanted to be RoboCop. I wanted to be. You know, because that was before, you know, you discover, like, you know, your sexuality, and you actually, you know, care about being able to feel people, you know. But yeah, so, but for many years, I went from wanting to be like, I wanted to be a RoboCop, or I wanted to be either RoboCop or John McClane.
From Die Hard. RoboCop sure does stick out in all the work. I kind of get that feeling, especially the Kramer's piece.
I can't really escape it. It's something that I really love. I really love RoboCop, and it also shows that somebody that has suffered, but he's not letting that get in the way of what he has to do. And so I don't know. That's also me. I don't like to complain. I don't like to bother people. I like to respect people to the best of my ability. You know, I'm a decent person unless I'm provoked. You know, like RoboCop is very much the same way. You know, he knows what he has to do. He does it. And, I mean, even when he wasn't a RoboCop and he was a human being, he wasn't programmed. He did this, you know, he, it was, he was self-initiating, like, you know, to be a decent person. And that carried on into his next life as a cyborg.
Tell me about the White Devil.
Well, the White Devil would be just, I guess he'd just be the devil, wouldn't he? He'd just be an evil character who's also, but it's all, maybe it's just a maybe. I mean, because I don't know. I mean, I wrote it, but I don't know what it means, right? So anyway, so he's just, you know, he's that inherent evil that's inside of us. I guess that's an appropriate answer to say. People would want to believe that. It could be anything, really. It's just, but like I said, it's just, he's got a sense of humor. He's, you know, I don't really think there's anything good about him. And, you know, he's evil. He's like a Danny Hellman prankster, but except he's really evil and he harms people.
Danny Hellman does no wrong, folks. He's a good guy.
Danny Hellman has wronged people. He's wronged me on a number of occasions. He's posed as different people and threatened my life.
Aw, that's not very nice of him.
I know. I think it's actually really funny.
I think you should kick his ass.
What's that?
I think you should kick his ass.
Well, we're neighbors now, so maybe I might. But I don't know. It's hard to get him, get him out of the house. He's usually breastfeeding his child. So
that's a talent.
He's a busy guy. He really is. But Danny, you know, I consider him a friend. I don't know what he considers me, except for being like a contributor, you know, a constant contributor to his, to his anthologies. That's how I know. I've known him since 2000, and the White Devil, right? Because we're just skipping around here.
Yeah.
So what else? So you want to know, where his gauntlet came from? Do you want to know why it draws horns different in every panel? do you want to talk about your favorite White Devil quote? There's white power tattoo on his shoulder? I mean, what is it that you really want to know about the White Devil?
Well, a lot of work has gone into creating the White Devil, it sounds like.
I think in all the characters. Maybe it's not a lot of work. A friend of mine, the aforementioned Fuckface Digitalis, like, he's read my comics, you know, because, of course, he's my best friend and also, you know, kind of a harsh critic. He'll give me, like, his honest opinion on stuff, but usually it's in my favor, which is, you know, ego-stroking, so it's good because there's certain people I won't show my work because they're not going to like it, so I don't show them. Anyway, so he reads my comics, and, you know, he just looks at me and he says, you know, it's good, but all your characters sound like you. I'm like, oh. So I guess what I'm saying is that, like, maybe it's not a lot of work. I don't have to put a lot of development into it because I make the characters sound the way I want them to sound, but I guess maybe I want everybody to sound like me.
Well, I mean, that's a common thread among a lot of cartoonists where, I mean, you know, it's your story that you're telling. Regardless of how absurd or extreme it may be, it's still speaking from your heart, so to say. Oh, that sounded terribly cheesy, didn't it?
What you found what terribly cheesy?
I just sounded cheesy just there.
It's okay, because I probably sound like an idiot. I have no idea what I sound like recorded. I haven't been recorded in years.
You don't sound like an idiot, but I'm sure you're recorded when you're working at Old Navy and you didn't know it.
Oh, yeah, well, I was an idiot there, for sure. For real.
Now, one fascinating thing I love about your work, especially with the one in the Typhoon, is just how you seem to kind of deconstruct things. And I don't want to use the term deconstruct, but it's like I'm looking at one of your characters and you can kind of see the insides and the guts and like what's putting them together.
Well, that's important to know what the character consists of, what the insides are. And sometimes maybe it's just a visual thing where this will look good. But most of the time, I like, if a character has a tattoo, like, you know, and the character's designs are usually inconsistent. It just depends on the feeling of the panel and how it's going to work. And yeah, I mean, a character in some panel, this is going to sound retarded, but like, you know, he's showing a lot of guts, you know, so what are you going to see under, even though he hasn't been splayed open, there's no spear, there's no wound, you're still going to be able to, his guts will still be visible to you. You know, the reader or whatever. I mean, just like certain things are visually emphasized, you know, so it makes sense and whatever. I'm not good at being subtle. I've been told that's not important to me. What's important is that like I say everything that I want to say in these comics. And I'm not making money, so I mean I should be able to say whatever I want. And I think the work is good, so I should be able to employ any sort of tactic there is for me to tell exactly the story that I want to tell.
What kind of stuff are you working on now?
Lately, I've been a bad boy, been really naughty. I'm just making work that I don't even care about, just so I can eat food and have cigarettes to smoke and whatever, drink coffee and be alive. And I don't have a website anymore. My website's been defunct for about 3 or 4 years. Can't afford it, so I'm using this Flickr service. That's it's an offshoot of fucking if you have a Yahoo account, then yep. You can get a free Flickr account. And so that's what I use as my website. But, it's not that I don't completely care about it. I would like to get to be working on some comics. I have folders and folders and hundreds of pages of scripts and things that I haven't been able to do yet because I just, the time equals money, and I don't have the money right now to do stuff that isn't going to make me any money because, I think it's even extra difficult to make money selling the originals of your comic strip pages.
Yeah. With one of your pages, what kind of dimensions are we looking at for size? Because they're so detailed.
Well, I think I draw them kind of small. They're roughly like 11.5 by 15 or 11.5 by 17. Somewhere around the dimensions are usually around there. Like the Kramer's shit is all compacted. I think it was either 11 by 15 or 11 by 17. I think, no, 11 by 15. But, I liked it, and I wanted to be in the Kramer's 7. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to make it, but I just, the dimensions were, it's daunting, the fucking, like, holy shit, I gotta fill this whole page. But then again, I still, like, was trying to, mapping this shit out, mapping my story out. I'm like, I came to this problem before where I can't work with the page restrictions. I only had allotted one page, so I just couldn't do it. So I had to pass it up.
It's too bad.
Yeah, kind of sucked.
Do you have anything else coming out soon-ish?
Soon-ish, I still have yet to. I have like hundreds of pages of fucking scripts and notes and ideas and whatever. And a publisher that is more or less willing to work with me and wants to put my solo book out, but at the moment I'm kind of paralyzed because I can't do it right now.
But you get more personal satisfaction out of comics than from doing say sheet of art.
Yeah, then doing a commission, someone's like, draw me, blah, 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 and doing blah, blah, blah. And then, so, yeah, I'll do that, or, I've made images available on my Flickr, and, I've had a few people purchase that. I mean, that's how I've been living very poorly for the last, about 3 years, just doing commission work or, like, selling work that I've already done, but it's all been just images. It hasn't been my comic pages. I've never sold a single comic page that I've done.
Is that just sort of personal choice?
Well, I think in the beginning it was a personal choice, but right now I'm in a mode where if someone would offer me, a decent amount of money, then yeah, I would part with my original comic pages because they've already been, I can just scan them in and I can print it out and then I can jerk off to it. But what's important is that, it has been printed and it's in circulation, so it's alive, I'm at a point in my life I'm just kind of, ready to part with shit that they can either be taking up space or I can make money with, so.
That's a lot of self-satisfaction from a page.
There's, yeah, did you recall
it?
Yeah, if I can blast nuts over a page, then I feel like that's how I know that I'm satisfied with the work. Like I get really excited about it. No, and not literally. I don't jack off or masturbate to my own work, but I do get immense satisfaction from the most satisfaction I can get as a comic person. And this is like the most rewarding thing. It's even better than money. I work my ass off. I do a comic. Finish it, it's published, people see it, people I don't know, then they contact me and, give me a pat on the back, whatever, fucking throw me a snack, and, wow, I really liked your comic, or, it spoke to me, or, maybe touched me in some way, whatever, but that's the most satisfaction, or if I can sometimes, even be on hand for someone, because No. Be on hand for someone to read my work and to see, like, the expressions that they make, you know, as they're reading them.
What kind of reactions have you gotten from people? Are people unsure of how to take you?
It just kind of depends on how white they are, or depends, you know, just, you know, if how, maybe if they're sheltered, or maybe people believe this stuff, and, you know, wholly. I think there's enough in there to believe, because majority of my work, of the work, any story is autobiographical in some way, or just straight out is. Some people, it's like, why you do this? What? You think this is funny? This isn't funny. You're not funny. So I've had negative reactions, but I've also had reactions where people are really into it, and, you know, they're nodding their heads to it. You know, like, it's a jam.
I think it's great. I think it's fabulous, honest, you know, violent goodness.
Well, I'm glad that you enjoy it. So then if you enjoy it, and if enough people hit your website and listen to this interview, and they respect what you say, then maybe they'll want to buy my work, too, and then contact me personally to commission a piece of artwork that I don't care about.
There we go. And we will have the link available on the website for folks to check out, because I think the Flickr account is a long, long, long name and won't really translate well. Well, thanks for joining us today, Victor.
Hey,
for joining
you're welcome.
Me. I look forward to any madness you have brewing, and I'll be checking up on your Flickr site. And I guess for folks out there buying stuff, they can find your work in both Legal Action Comics volumes, the Typhoon, Kramer's Urgot 6, and Project Superior. I think people can still find copies of that kicking around.
Yes. Well, Project Superior, maybe not so much. There's a True Porn Volume 1. You can't really find that either. But there's
not
also, don't forget, my friend Cheese Hasselberger puts out a book, a series called House of 12. I'm in House of 12 Volume 3 and Volume 4. Gobble them down, eat them up, suck my nuts, buy my work. Click the hyperlink on the Inkstuds website and commission me and help me eat food.
Feed the man. He's hungry.
The outlaw god.
Thank you so much, Victor.
Hey, thanks, Robin, and I will alert you of any dates or whatever. I mean, if you're really interested, if you're authentically interested, then I will.
I like your stuff. I do.
I like you. I like you. You're a good guy.
Thanks, man.
Hey, no problem. So I don't know. We can do this. We can have even a follow-up interview with more empty compliments from two people that don't know each other.
We can just have a circle jerk on air.
All right, yes. Sounds good. And I won't trouble you with any more of your time.
You can't imitate me on this fucking tape. You ain't ringing the bell. I'm ready when you are. You ain't ringing the bell. You ain't busting the grape. You ain't imitating me on this fucking tape.
My shit ain't corny.
You ain't ringing the bell. You ain't busting the grape. You ain't imitating me on this fucking tape. You ain't ringing the bell. You ain't busting the grape. You ain't imitating me on this fucking tape. You ain't ringing the bell. You ain't busting the grape. You ain't imitating me on this fucking tape. You ain't ringing the bell. You ain't busting the grape. You ain't imitating me on this fucking tape. You ain't ringing the bell. You ain't busting the grape.
But I'm telling y'all, bitch ass niggas, if y'all don't fucking. Y'all colored bitch-ass, faggot, punk-ass motherfuckers don't see that these white people are trying to take over your shit. Don't worry. Y'all better be happy the old dirty bastard is here. Y'all better be happy that I'm here. The beat the shit out of all of y'all faggot, punk-ass motherfuckers.
You ain't imitating me on this fucking tape, bitch-ass niggas. I shut the fucking whole world down. You white motherfuckers can never, y'all can't ever take over. You can't ever take over. You shut the fuck up and you shut the fuck up. That's what the fuck you do.
Can I get a beer? Yo, I need some beer.
You ain't using your phone, you ain't calling the cops. Cause nigga, I'm the only king of the block.
I'm the only black god, motherfucker.
And I came to rock the spot. Why when I throw a football pass at a bitch, she missed? Ain't trying to be funny, gonna use my fist. You can't use the family feud. You can't run it on the cuckoo. The brain's saying, but keep on dirty safe. Not locked up, cause I have your fucking ass locked up. I stash you, licking you down like that blunt. You ain't getting what you want.
I do what I want.
If I got a problem got a problem until it's gone. I'm the only unique A-son. You reap what you sow, fucking with the O. I got the
precincts. You ain't down in the popo.